Hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadee karup, guten tag, ja wee viva cat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical, vivisection prison, killitary, industrial, corpor nation, in the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster, bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam, Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Have you ever felt, you know, that the whole world has just gone totally mad, and that you are the only sane one, the only normal one? I'm having one of those weeks right now. I should be used to it by now, you know, with the so-called animal rights movement that does more to the detriment of animals than help them. As we will discuss concerning the HSUS tool Moby, the vegan whose environmental activism now is to support the beef industry. Ha! And, hey, we can all, laugh at it as if it were satire, and we can, well, chomp on a Sierra Club sandwich while chuckling. Okay, so today, on this program, the place where you least expect it, will come sanity. Yes, where you least expect it. Coming up later in the program, we'll be talking about real water issues in California, including we'll have activists who are saying that growing feed for so-called livestock is unconstitutional in California. And later in the program, we will talk to Todd Schumann, director of Wasteful Unreasonable Use. We'll also talk to Ara Martirosyan, executive director of the Sequoia Forest Keeper in Kerrville, California, and Mike Hudak, former chair of the Sierra Club's National Grazing Committee and author of Western Turf Wars, The Politics of Public Land Ranching. Yes. Sierra, which is a Sierra Club publication, or should I say a Sierra Club sandwich menu? I don't know. We now know that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions, responsible for our California drought. And what's on the menu from the Sierra Club, organization that has been mocked in the movie Cowspiracy? You know, can anything be more insane than what's on the menu? Under, let's see, what's it called here? It's called Taste Test. Six of the eco-friendliest meats you can buy. Now, eco-friendliest, we must observe, doesn't mean that they are eco-friendly. It's just, you know, eco-friendliest of what is not the least bit eco-friendly. Ooh, I may have commentary running as we look at this. So it says here in this very bizarre article by Chelsea Liu, it says, one could argue that sustainability is at the heart of charcuterie's centuries-old tradition. You know, cold meats, stuff like that. One could argue, which one would that be, Chelsea? Because that one would certainly be idiotic. Don't you love it when somebody says, oh, one could argue that. Sustainability in meat? Sorry. Anyway, so she says, It's taking a less desirable cut. Okay, so all right, to maintain the flow here. One could argue that sustainability is at the heart of charcuterie, centuries-old tradition. It's taking a less desirable cut of meat and transforming it into a satisfying meal, says Eric Miller, who co-chairs the Charcuterie Committee for the Good Food Awards. In short, no part of the animal goes to waste. And here again, we have the influence of the Humane Society of the United States. That is one of its campaigns to save animals. It says, eat more of the animal, you know, eat more of the body. So, you know, we're not wasting. Or you're not wasting. Yeah, who eats animals? Says Miller's team tapped some appealing choices in this category, including salami, pâtés, mousses, and jerkies. The main ingredients: meat, salt, and thyme. He says. It says these six options featured clockwise in the above photo, starting with the slices under the white dish with the spoon, are all made from animals that were humanely butchered. Well, thank you, Humane Society of the United States, for giving the Sierra Club the language it needs here to cover itself. So, yes, all of these are made from animals that were humanely butchered. I would like to see videos of the animals who are humanely butchered. We should all look at them and see exactly what that is. They were hugged and kissed to death. And also another advantage, in addition to the fact that they were humanely butchered, they were murdered nicely, and not pumped with hormones or antibiotics. The results are melt-in-your-mouth delicious. Ooh, the Sierra Club is telling us that decomposing body parts are melt-in-your-mouth delicious. That environmental devastation is melt-in-your-mouth delicious. She continues here from the Sierra Club publication. The folks at an Indianapolis meatery called Smoking Goose seam butcher their meat, separating cuts by the natural places where muscles meet. It's time-consuming, but ensures that no part of the pig goes to waste. Even the ears are made into dog treats. Isn't that wonderful? No part of the animal goes to waste. Again, the language of the Humane Society of the United States being used by the Sierra Club. And the Sierra Club is just so natural, right? I mean, like, so into nature that, you know, that's a natural place to stab animals so we don't waste any of the carcass that the cadaver lovers love to have melt in their mouths. It says the company's South Cider Salami is a tart, savory blend of free-range goose. Don't you feel good? It's free-range. Like, you know, like HSUS promotes. Like, you know, HSUS, I guess, supporter Moby, I guess, supports free-range, right? He's a big supporter of HSUS, so he probably supports eating, you know, more of the animal's body, free-range. The salami is a tart, savory blend of free-range goose meat, pork, and Indiana persimmons fermented in cider from a local brewery. Ooh, free-range pork. I wonder if any of that would be the body parts of Joe Maxwell's pigs, the vice president from HSUS, the organization supported by Moby and Dr. Bronner's. It says here, Paul Murdoch, owner of Gary West's Artisan Smoked Meats, is picky about the people who raise the animals that become his line of sausages and jerkies. All of the ranchers he works with preserve their land and treat their livestock well. Can you believe we're hearing this nonsense from the Sierra Club? Well, they hear it from HSUS. That's where all of this nonsense gets its credibility. Okay, so all of the ranchers preserve their land and treat their livestock well. His Wood River Smoked Wagyu Jerky comes in hand-cut strips. Is that treating animals well when you cut them by hand. Oh, I guess cutting them by hand. That's treating them well. Hand-cut strips of marbled beef smoked with pear wood from on-site orchards. A tasty source of protein on backpacking trips. Its high fat content gives it the flavor of a buttered steak, especially when heated. $15 for 4 ounces. this is from the Sierra Club. Can you believe it? The Sierra Club. Well, it's telling you when you're out backpacking and hiking, you should have some high fat content, you know, so your heart can pump. Possibly. And a tasty source of protein. Good medical advice from the Sierra Club, since animal protein is a carcinogen, as we learned from the China study. Okay. Animal protein, the number one carcinogen to which Americans are most exposed. It's almost natural at this point, right, to be exposed to that carcinogen. Right, Sierra Club? S. Wallace Edwards and Sons got its start among the farms of Virginia's Peanut Belt, where swine would roam after harvest, eating the nuts scattered on the fields. The company's owner, Sam Edwards, ensures that his certified humane Berkshire hogs have plenty of acreage to wander on, and he feeds them grass and grain. Isn't he nice? It's certified humane. Where do we get such nonsensical language? The Humane Society of the United States? Yes, of course. His Suriano ham is dry cured for 18 months and pasture-raised sans antibiotics, sliced thinly in pairs with fruit, $44 for 12 ounces. Okay. So people eat cadavers that are, you know, like rotting for a year and a half? That sounds so disgusting. Oh, time flies. Okay, we'll continue with this and that. We'll talk about Moby, more about the Sierra Club. On Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Support the program with a tax-deductible donation. Click Donate at GoVeganRadio.com. Call in number 855-660-4261. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Facebook, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden. There are also two Bob Linden pages on Facebook. And, you know, here we are with the world's top environmental specialist telling us that the only way to solve climate change and therefore address the drought in California is for a worldwide population shift away from so-called livestock products to vegan products. To vegan foods, 50 to 85% of us. We need a 50 to 85% increase in vegans to save the world. And so, what does the Sierra Club tell us? Well, it puts out a menu with a Sierra Club sandwich. The Sierra Club tells us to eat salami, and Moby tells us to eat beef. More about Moby coming up. People think it's satire for Moby, but. Satire is supposed to be funny, and satire is not supposed to come from a website dedicated to supporting the beef industry. I'm reading from an article in Sierra, just these wonderful suggestions on ways to eat your way to extinction and environmental devastation. Chelsea Liu writing in Sierra. What are we up to? Which menu item? Okay, the salami here. Okay, so while the pork, salt, and spices that go into, and these are supposedly the, six eco-friendliest meats you can eat. Doesn't mean that they're eco-friendly, just, you know, compared to what? Like, meat, dairy, fish, and eggs are the most destructive environmental force on the planet, so, you know, compared to what? Well, the pork, salt, and spices that go into salami nostrano come from non-GMO providers. Oh, that makes this so environmentally friendly, Sierra Club. You're right. Ah, salami with non-GMO ingredients. Well, okay. Those are typical ingredients for salami, it says here. What makes this sausage distinct, says Paul Bertoli, founder of Framani Handcrafted Foods, is that the flavor imparted by specific microorganisms that grow in the Framani's aging rooms. The mild, yeasty meat is best with figs or melon. Maybe you're with Alka-Seltzer. So what makes that salami tasty would be the germs that are please. Okay, as we continue. As the in-house charcuterie at Formaggio Kitchen in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Julie Briggs uses a hand-cranked sausage stuffer. Wait a second. That sounds pornographic to me. Can I say that on the radio? Gas ovens to craft locally sourced beef and pork into charcuterie. 1 5-pound batch at a time. Da-da-da, let me see. Oh, her favorite is the tongue and cheek terrine. Is that what it is? Tongue and cheek? Which rolls beef and pork cheeks, eggs, cream, and spices into a flavorful loaf garnished with corned beef tongue and thinly sliced who knows what. Wow. These folks are living right up to HSUS standards here, using what we... parts of the body we normally wouldn't want to eat, huh? Those cheeks and tongues getting into the salami, eco-friendly, according to the Sierra Club. Let's see, do I want to talk about any more of the salami? Not particularly. I want to talk more about the gas ovens being recommended here by the Sierra Club. I don't know, just call me suspicious of... You know, I'm a conspiracy theorist about everyone, right? Moby, HSUS, the Sierra Club, promoting cooking with gas in a Sierra Club, cooking meat with gas in a Sierra Club publication. Well, let's go to is this February 2012 Time magazine, where it says, Time has learned that between 2007 and 2010, the Sierra Club accepted over $25 million in donations from the gas industry, mostly from Aubrey McClendon, CEO of Chesapeake Energy, one of the biggest gas drilling companies in the U.S., and a firm heavily involved in fracking. Okay. All right. So much credibility for the Sierra Club here, and the Sierra Club sandwich made of salami. Now, coming up, let's talk about Moby and his support of the beef industry in addressing the drought in California. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden on Facebook. There are also two extraneous Bob Linden pages on Facebook for you to be my friend. And My friend Professor Gary Francione is off this week, so he will return next week. We were just talking about the absurdity of the Sierra Club recommending its eco-friendliest meats, and well, that seems like the pinnacle of insanity. I don't know. I think that Moby may be topping that as a participant in what I think is one of the dumbest campaigns imaginable or unimaginable. I mean, it's so ridiculous that I'm talking about it, you know, that it seems that Moby is supporting the consumption of beef as a can still continue to eat beef as long as you skip showers. And, you know, people think that this is satire. So they're upset with me. They're saying, I have no sense of humor about any of this. And I don't know. I thought satire is supposed to be funny. But, well, for example, well, let's listen to Moby in this campaign, what he calls a message to California.
Hi, I'm Moby, and I'm a vegan. That's my personal choice. But I also believe it's possible for you meat lovers to enjoy your meat responsibly. Unfortunately, due to the California drought, responsible meat eating has become a challenge. Water resources in California are at an all-time low. Many factors are to blame, including, yes, beef production. Did you know that 1 pound of steak has a water footprint of over 1,800 gallons? Yes, that's a lot of water. But what if you could equalize that footprint? What if you could have your steak and eat it too? See, if you skip 37 showers, that will make up for 1 quarter pounder. That's what the Skip Showers for Beef campaign is all about. 37 showers? That might sound ridiculous, but in the face of this historic drought, we all need to think outside the box. This website will help you do exactly that. Here you'll find tips on how to save water, stay clean, and enjoy your guilt-free, zero-water-impact beef. Skip showers for beef. I won't, because I don't eat meat. But you can. Go for it. Change happens one shower at a time.
Come on, you can. You don't have to be like me. I'm a vegan. It's only a personal choice. You can keep killing the animals and destroying the environment. You can do it. Just skip a few showers, right? It's my personal choice. Come on, you can do it. Here's Moby. He says, I also believe it's possible for you meat lovers to enjoy your meat responsibly. Is this what a vegan would say? What if you can have your steak and eat it too? I'm really not finding the humor or the satire in this. And he says, oh, enjoy your guilt-free, zero-water-impact beef. Is this the making of satire? People are going to take this seriously. And it is serious because this is part of a website given us by a third-generation cattle rancher in California who is serious about this. Now people say to me, oh, Bob, it's satire because Moby's saying, well, if you skip 37 showers, you know, that's what makes it satire. It's so ridiculous, right? Well, you know, this ridiculous satirical campaign just had its launch a few days ago, where it seems to be taking itself very seriously, calling Governor Brown one of the shower skippers. And here, listen to this from the campaign launch.
To announce, we have an exciting new drought fighting initiative that launched today. It's actually endorsed by a few beloved celebrities in Los Angeles, including Moby, and it's called the Skip Showers for Beef campaign.
As you see here, you can find it at skipshowersforbeef.com. You can download water tables to teach you how to skip showers and stay clean, all in the name of beef. We're never going to give up beef. We love it. I love it. And this is how you can keep eating beef and also feel good about yourself.
Thank you.
Thank
Skip
you.
Showers for beef.
Skip showers for beef.
What a satire. Everybody will know that this satirical production is telling you to go vegan to save the environment, isn't it? It's so obviously satirical. You know, this what they say is an exciting new drought-fighting campaign where you can stay clean all in the name of beef. We're never going to give up beef. We love it. I love it. This is how you can keep eating beef and also feel good about yourself. Satirically, of course, we mean go vegan. If you can't read between the lines, you can read the lines that are in Think Progress, where Moby says, well, as much as I endorse the vegan lifestyle, I know I can't force everyone to put down their burgers. Well, Moby, you can at least suggest it, couldn't you? Moby said, continuing the quote of Moby, but maybe they could at least skip some showers here and there so that we all have enough water to survive. That seems reasonable. We'll skip a few showers here and there, right? That seems reasonable. it's satirical, right? As Think Progress says, it says the campaign might seem like pure satire, but, okay, where is it? It says here. I got to go to the top of the page. Sorry. We're scrolling. Talk amongst yourselves for a moment. Okay, so it says here, Skip Showers for Beef, a new grassroots project born of the California drought, acknowledges that giving up beef, a product that uses huge amounts of water, as we will discuss with our next guest shortly, is hard, you know, to do so. The campaign's creators have come up with a creative way for Californians to keep eating meat while reducing their water use. Just stop showering. People are taking this seriously, by the way. You know, even though the vegans who want to, you know, give Moby some slack, even though Moby's a part of the Humane Society of the United States and still supports Prop 2 and cage-free, you know, torture and all that ridiculous stuff. Okay, so let's see. It says the project. Where's the talk about who created this? All right. Well, anyway, it's okay. Skip Showers for Beef. It's a third generation cattle rancher named Bransford. He's been ranching, you know, for generations and isn't immune to the criticism that the beef industry is facing during the drought, but he classifies statistics that draw attention to how much water the beef industry uses as fear-mongering. He says these numbers are frightening to people. What we wanted to do was counter that sort of statistic and say, you can say this about the hamburger, but we're going to tell you something really out of the box here, which is there is an alternative. If you want to keep eating beef, there is an alternative. That is a smelly population. I'm serious. Go to skipshowers.com. It's telling you to use talcum powder, use baby wipes. This is a serious campaign. And here it's there's even more music attached to it here. What's the song here on the YouTube channel? Let's hear a little of that.
If you're from Cali and you like to have your beef and eat it too, you need to realize we're in a drought in California. But there's one thing we all can do. Skip showers for beef, 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 skip showers for beef.
Well, there you have it, the satirical campaign. Listen to the music there. If you listen between the lines, it's saying to go vegan, even though we only hear skip showers for beef. Obviously, it's satirical, and the message is to go vegan, the only way we can save the planet. So, and you really don't sacrifice anything when you go vegan, by the way, or you don't sacrifice anyone. If you're in Northern California in the Bay Area, you're quite fortunate because you're near a vegetarian house, a vegan restaurant, 100% vegan restaurant, organic restaurant, with some of the most amazing food you will ever experience. And you should definitely check it out, 520 East Santa Clara Street. And if you don't believe me, check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. Vegetarianhouse.us. And Vegetarian House caters. So if you have an event coming up, a business event, a social event, you're getting married, Vegetarian House can cater and make it a really special event with the eco-friendliest food. Sorry, no salami on the menu there, Sierra Club supporters. But, you know, do check out the menu. It's an amazing array of, just spectacular international cuisines. So check that out. Also, Evolution Dog and Cat Food has just come out with a new organic variety, and Evolution is being kind enough to offer you a 10% discount when you call 651-221-9056. That's 651-221-9056. And you get a 10% discount. Go Vegan Radio gets a 10% donation from some really great people. They donate a lot of food. They're really active in the community. So get your 10% discount. You have to mention Go Vegan Radio or Bob Linden. Call Evolution at 651-221-9056. Vegan dog and cat food. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden on Facebook, Bob Linden pages on Facebook. You can support the program with a tax-deductible donation by clicking Donate at GoVeganRadio.com. Is there anybody who can help me make some sense out of the environmental movement and the drought? And, you know, can we get past the insanity here of Sierra Club salami and vegan beef eating by skipping showers? And, well, and now on Go Vegan Radio, activists who charge that growing feed for livestock in California is unconstitutional. Finally, somebody making some sense here today. And so we are going to hear from Todd Schumann and Ara Martirosyan and Mike Hudak. And first up, we have Todd Schumann, who is director of Wasteful Unreasonable Use, that is WURU. And so, Todd, to get things going here, I'd like to ask, why do you think that water used to grow livestock feed is unconstitutional in California?
Well, it's because it's wasteful and unreasonable. Now, those words may not sound like they mean much, but in fact, the California Constitution in Article 10, Section 2 declares, quote, "the waste or unreasonable use of water be prevented." Later says, "the right to water or to the use or flow of water does not and shall not extend to the waste or unreasonable use of water," unquote. It's there from a 1928 constitutional amendment.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
Now, we believe It's wasteful to use California irrigation water to be used to grow crops that are used to produce animal protein, because we all know a fraction of that irrigated water could be used to grow equivalent amounts of plant-based protein and carbohydrates.
Absolutely.
There's a whole bunch of studies out there about this, but in our comment, we cite actually the most conservative one we could find, and even in that estimate, it documents that legumes, beans, peas, etc., they use only 1/6 of the water that bovine meat requires to produce a comparable gram of protein. That's 19 liters compared to 112 liters. This study also documented that legumes also require substantially less water to produce a gram of protein than milk. That value was 19 liters compared to 31 liters. So it's wasteful. I mean, when you can get a comparable thing for much less.
Well, that sounds quite sane to me, but it seems like when we hear the media, they're always kind of blaming the almond industry. But can you explain the almond industry's relationship to livestock feed crop industry, if there is one? Or
I certainly can. Give me just a moment. Sorry about this. I'm trying to figure out where I took some notes on this, and I'm scrolling up to get them. Okay.
Don't worry. Take your time.
Yeah. Here's what it is. When you have an almond tree, an almond orchard full of almond trees, when the almond tree is developing, when the fruits on it are developing, there develops an outer protective covering that's called an almond hull. We always hear about almond shells and the nuts, but we never hear about almond hulls, and we think, if we ever did hear a hull, we think, oh, that's the shell. No, this is different. This is an outer protective thing that provides and channels water and resources into the actual almond kernel that's being grown. That is protected by a hard shell. So you got this outer thing that looks pretty weird, and then inside you've got a kernel, and then you've got a shell growing over it. Well, after the kernel and the protective shell are developed, the hull withers away. Its function is no longer needed. So it either drops on the ground or just kind of hangs there. Well, scientists have found that this hull has a relatively high nutritional value for dairy cows. So,
oops, hold that thought, Todd. We have to take a break, and we'll continue our discussion on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Is it unconstitutional to use water for livestock feed in California? We will continue. Second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. We are live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. You can click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com, where the program is archived, and we are also syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. Animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione is off this week, but Professor Francione will return next week. Today we are talking to activists who are charging that growing feed for livestock in California is unconstitutional. And we've been talking to Todd Schumann, who's director of Wasteful Unreasonable Use. And just before the break, it was getting interesting because, well, you know, Todd, I'm always upset when the media blame vegan foods for, you know, like E. coli or salmonella, you know, when it's an animal source, but they'll blame tomatoes or peppers or lettuce. And you know, it seemed with the drought that almonds were getting blamed. And I thought, well, you know, we have to defend our nuts. But here you come along and you were starting to allude to a connection between almonds and the dairy industry?
Well, it's actually a really interesting connection because I'll finish it for you, but the almond industry has actually kind of tried to defend itself against those charges by noting that it is allied with the dairy industry and the meat industry. which is kind of interesting. They're basically saying, which is true. they're an almond tree produces multiple agricultural commodities, some that can be eaten by vegans and, you know, gives rise to almonds and almond milk, but there's other products that go right into the dairy and the livestock industry. But let me finish this wrap for you just to give you the numbers. So we were talking about almond holes, you know, and after the almond nut and the kernel is formed, the almond hole kind of disintegrates. It no longer needs anything. Well, those are collected, and then they are sold to the dairy industry as livestock feed, and it's actually a pretty nutritional supplement for the dairy industry. It actually fetches a higher price per ton than some of the other dairy feeds around there, like corn silage and stuff. But what's kind of interesting, when you actually look at the mass of the almond nut kernel of the mass of the holes compared to the mass of the almond nut kernels, you see that there's almost a 2-to-1 ratio of almond holes to almond nut kernels. So there's actually most of the water that is used in an almond tree to produce an almond, most of it goes to creating almond holes and the almond shells, which are also used for the dairy industry. Now, I'm not even going to get into the almond shells, but I just want to give you some numbers. This is from Tulare County for 2013, and this is from the Ag Farm Commissioner's Office. And they document it. In 2013, nearly 41,000 tons of almond meats or kernels were sold. In contrast, nearly 75,000 tons of almond holes were sold for livestock feed. Now, we all know it's the almond nut that makes the almond grower the money, and it's a huge amount. So we're never going to claim, and you can't claim that they're growing almonds in order to provide stuff for the livestock industry. But the fact is, when you look at the water and the products that result from the use of that water, actually about 2/3 of the products that come from that tree actually go into the livestock feed industry, go into the or livestock feed, or if you're looking at almond shells, they actually go to bedding for livestock. So actually most of the water goes to support the livestock industry. So we never really hear about that.
Am I supposed to be an anti-almond vegan?
I don't know. I like almonds. I use almond milk, but, you know, I'm thinking about it, you know. I presume since I'm making those almond growers lots of money, I guess I'm contributing to the economic power of the livestock and the dairy industry, even though I'm trying to cut back and stop that. And now it's like it's insidious. We're ensnared in different ways, and it's
right that you can't even imagine. You know, I mean, normally I think we're thinking. You know, lately we've been thinking about generally like alfalfa. You know, and
right.
we didn't really think almond hulls. You know, but but how do exports of alfalfa and other forms of hay worsen the water crisis in California, would you say?
Well, they do. We believe they do. Here's the way I'm presenting it. In short, you know, really, there's only so much California alfalfa and other hay that's being grown in the state and is sold. And so if a substantial amount of that total statewide supply is sold for export, and it is, sometimes a lot of it is sold, I'll get into that later, then there's less overall livestock feed supply available to use elsewhere. And now the main users in California are Central Valley Dairies. And of course, we don't really want to support them either. But the fact is, if they don't have enough feed available, their prices go up. They may lay off workers. They have to pay more. They get all agitated, and they start organizing politically. And they're very potent. They're very powerful economically and politically. And what they do is they put pressure on the State Water Resources Control Board and the governor and legislators and say, quit sending that money, quit sending, allowing that water to flow into the Delta to, you know, deal with water quality standards or protect the Delta smelt. We need that water so that we can grow stuff for the dairy industry. And that's a pretty powerful force. And so what typically happens is that the agencies like the State Water Resource Control Board and the government, they kowtow. And so water quality standards for the Delta get deleted. Less water goes into the Delta areas that the Delta smelt needs, and it needs very sensitive requirements in terms of mixed water, fresh and saline to thrive. And those standards get weak, and so then the Delta smelt start going extinct and the other fish species start going extinct. Why? So that farmers south of the Delta, you know, they basically can grow more alfalfa or irrigated pasture for the dairy industry. So it's a real problem. I mean, most of the alfalfa and forage grasses that are sold for export, they're actually grown down in Southeast California in Imperial County, where it takes a lot of water to grow a ton of alfalfa. The more that area exports that alfalfa, the lower the supply is for alfalfa for the state, and then there just means that there's greater demands to make sure that there's more water going to the farmers when it really should be going to the fish and the Delta. So I just want to give you some numbers before we, you know, just last week I followed the California Hay Report, and I talked to the people who put that together. They're great people to talk to, and that is the source. You get the numbers weekly on how much alfalfa that's being grown in California and other grasses is being sold for export. Last week, over three-quarters of all California-grown hay sales were for export. There was like 34,000 tons of hay and alfalfa that was on the market, and 24,000 of it went to exports. Typically, goes
that's
to China.
That's like exporting our water, isn't it? It's like just exporting water.
It's pretty much what it is. And the thing about it, I mean, there's a lot of products that are exported, but there's hardly any employment that's involved in growing alfalfa and irrigated pasture. And there's hardly there's even less if it's going for export. I mean, it's bad to grow alfalfa in the first place, but I mean, you know, at least until we get a transition away from this. If we are going to allocate California water to grow this kind of stuff, it should at least go to California businesses and California employees. But it doesn't even do that. It goes to China so that they can fatten up their own beef cows, you know, because now they're beef eaters as well. I don't know. It's crazy, but it just aggravates things. You know, there's great shortages. There's wars. There's extreme, intense battles taking place in the Central Valley and before the State Water Resources Control Board, and the farmers are saying, we need water, we need water. Well, you know, a big chunk of what they grow is livestock feed. If you don't have those exports in that, alfalfa is available for the dairies, we maybe don't need to cut back. We don't need to miss or redirect water that would normally go into the Delta to south of the Delta. So I think it is a major problem. But
you know,
tell us a little bit of a bigger problem.
We didn't mention, but I should that tell us a bit about the letter that you and Ara Martirosyan composed, and to whom, and what that entailed. We didn't mention that at all.
Well, actually, could I bring in Ara to talk about
sure.
that?
Oh, sure. Of course. Yes. Okay. So Ara is the executive director of the Sequoia Forest Keeper in Kerrville, California. And the mission there is to protect and restore the ecosystems of the southern Sierra Nevada, including both the Sequoia National Forest and the giant Sequoia National Monument, through monitoring and enforcement, education, and litigation. And welcome, Ara. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you, Bob?
Great. Great to have you here. So we've been talking about some of the nuts and bolts of the water issue in California, and that you and Todd have composed a comment letter, but we never really mentioned that letter yet. Can you give us some background on that and what that's about?
Well, essentially, it's looking at the issues that the State Water Resources Control Board has issued emergency orders to comply with the governor's requirements to compensate for the drought situation that California is experiencing. And what they've done is to cut water to cities and to some farmers, junior water rights holders, and allowed senior water rights holders to essentially continue some of their consumption as it has been in the past. And so we essentially looked at what some of the ways of changing the way water is allocated so that we would be able to address the drought problem, and we sent the letter to the State Water Resources Control Board looking at the Constitution and various other issues, including the methane that is being produced by livestock, so that people could understand that some crops are...
Ara, we need to take a break. We'll continue the discussion on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Today we are talking to activists who are charging that using water for livestock feed in California is unconstitutional. Currently we're talking to Ara Martirosyan, who's executive director of Sequoia Forest Keeper, and he and Todd Schumann, director of Wasteful Unreasonable Use, have composed a letter of over 30 pages long related to the State Water Resources Control Board's orders and Governor Brown's executive order. So where were we, Ara?
Well, we were basically talking about our letter to the State Water Resources Control Board and the issues that we wanted to point out to the board, that certain crops are unreasonable because of the methane that they produce, or because they use flood irrigation, or that they have acquired some additional waters when other users of water in California have been reduced in their volume of water that they have been allocated. So our letter was just looking at the crops that should be considered for not being planted in California because they are wasteful or unreasonable.
Hmm. So what are the most wasteful crops then, would you say?
Essentially the livestock feed crops, like alfalfa is one of the livestock feed crops that consumes a lot of water and produces methane, which exacerbates climate change.
Mm-hmm. And so either you, Ara, or Todd, if you want to jump in and talk a little bit, you just mentioned flood irrigation. I'm just wondering how that aggravates California's water problem.
You want me to jump in on this one, Ara?
Sure.
I'm fine with this. Yeah, flood irrigation is it is the method of irrigation largely used to grow alfalfa in irrigated pasture in California. And basically, as it sounds, you know, an area is flooded with lots of water, you know, up to, I don't know, foot deep or something like that, or whatever it is, depending on what they're growing, as opposed to water being applied very specifically and carefully to each plant, like an almond orchard. You know, you might have some drip irrigation or something like that. So that particular area where the roots of the tree are growing down, they're getting water. Flood irrigation, the whole acre gets the whole acre or unit of area there gets water there. And so when you're growing pasture and alfalfa, it takes a lot more water to grow that stuff. And we're talking like 4 to 5 acre feet per acre of water per year. And when we're talking an acre foot, we're talking a lot. We're talking, God, I got some numbers. 1 acre foot is about 326 gallons of water a day. So there's a lot of water used to that. And, you know, some
is
of
it 326 or 300, like 326,000, or am I
let
just...
Let me look at my number. No, 326 gallons per day of water is equivalent to 1 acre foot of water. And that's basically the amount of water it needs to cover an acre 1 foot high in water. So that's 326 gallons. There's a whole bunch of numbers. I actually wrote them down. If I get into them, I'll probably get lost, and your listeners will also get lost.
That can
too,
be. And I've seen numbers that say that, this was in Scientific American, saying that it could take up to 8,500 gallons of water just to grow the feed for 1 pound of beef. And I'll have to dig up that quote from Scientific American. I've done it a number of times on this show. So we have floods. We have we're flooding areas to grow alfalfa, and then that we also have a problem with groundwater too. And can you talk a little bit about the connection with how we are depleting groundwater through?
Sure. Yes, a recent preliminary examination of the causes of well failures in Tulare County sub-basin suggests that high groundwater use for irrigation of high water use feed crops, including alfalfa, cotton, corn, and sorghum, has been a contributing factor in triggering Tulare County in 2014. It's likely use of over a million acres of water.
Time for another break. We'll pick up on that with our guests on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. You can support the program with a tax-deductible donation by clicking Donate at GoVeganRadio.com, where this program will be archived. We're live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific, and you can click Listen Live. If you're listening live right now, you may have done that. I made reference earlier to a Scientific American... we're talking to Ara Martirosyan, who's Executive Director Sequoia Forest Keeper, and Todd Schumann, Director of Wasteful and Reasonable Use. Mike Hudak coming up. Todd and Ara have written a comment letter where, well, basically they're charging that the use of California water to grow feed for so-called livestock is unconstitutional, certainly wasteful. I just alluded to a Scientific American article earlier, which was written by Peter Gleick, G-L-E-I-K, making every drop count. And so what he said was, growing a pound of corn can take between 100 and 250 gallons of water, depending on soil and climate conditions and irrigation methods. But growing the grain to produce a pound of beef can require between 2,000 and 8,500 gallons, which seems astronomical to me. 8,500 gallons just to grow grain for a pound of beef. Ara, before the break, you were talking about the depletion of groundwater, the wells disappearing. I guess we're sucking the groundwater dry for livestock in California, right?
Yeah, well, pumping groundwater has been going on for centuries. There's an increased number of wells and improved technology and greater volumes of water being extracted since 2000, with corporate farmers and others sucking the groundwater with longer and longer straws. We are now unsustainably pulling groundwater from the ancient groundwater supplies. A major consequence of this pumping is that wells have been going dry. A total of 1,244 wells have failed throughout Tulare County over this time period, and with an average of 30 to 50 wells going dry per week. Much acreage continues to be devoted to livestock feed crops through Tulare County. Acreage has been irrigated largely through the use of pumped water over the last few years. According to recent research by the U.S. Geological Survey, the San Joaquin Central Valley is collapsing and groundwater depletion is to blame.
The valley is collapsing? The actual valley is collapsing?
Yes. Land subsidence is leading to collapsed bridges and cracked irrigation channels and pipes and twisted roads and railways. In some places, the ground is sinking nearly a foot a year. In addition to infrastructure damage, subsidence is increasing flood risk in areas where levees and canals also sink, which could eventually render them unusable.
That is unbelievable. It's like watching the collapse of civilization because people eat, you know, meat, dairy, fish, and eggs, and because we're growing feed for livestock in California. This is amazing. The state is collapsing. Is there a moral lesson here somewhere?
Well, a storage capacity collapse could be a harbinger of the collapse of our meat-based civilization.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, actually collapsing. And okay, and you know, we have low snowpack, we have drought conditions over the past 4 years. So have other conditions changed to cause a loss of groundwater and this
yes.
collapse of the land? Or
true.
Yeah. Tell us.
So groundwater is a problem, and we keep removing more and more of it, and so our mission should be to stop the depletion of groundwater and enable more of the groundwater to be replenished. But because a lot of the ground has already subsided and the storage capacity is in very fragile clay, we will be unable to restore some of this area that covers about 660 square miles of the Central Valley of California, because it's basically this clay from that was laid down during the Pleistocene epoch, which is about 200 feet thick and is very fragile and subject to collapse.
Wow. So the area where groundwater could be stored, if there were groundwater, is disappearing. And groundwater doesn't just, you know, it's not something that, you know, reappears instantaneously. This is something over thousands of years, millions of years, right? That ground, you know, we've had the... Whew, it's kind of scary. Let's bring in Mike Hudak. Maybe he'll scare us more, maybe not. He's the former chair of the Sierra Club's National Grazing Committee, although just saying Sierra Club kind of scares me. He's the author of Western Turf Wars, The Politics of Public Land Ranching, and producer of dozens of YouTube videos about ranching's harm to natural landscapes and the free living animals who live on them. And so welcome back, Mike. How are you today?
I'm fine, Bob. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you back. Well, tell us about your contribution to Ara's and Todd's comment letter to the California Water Resources Control Board.
Sure. Well, actually, my contribution was mostly in terms of looking at the impact on greenhouse gases that results from irrigating crops grown as feed for livestock. So, for example, if we look at a region in California known as the San Joaquin River Exchange Contractors Water Authority, well, that's a mouthful, something like 73% of Central Valley Project water was used to grow livestock feed there in 2014. And, of course, we know that there's a lot of these water-related environmental problems of using that water that Ara and Todd have already talked about. But but there's also a global environmental problem that is made worse simply by raising the livestock that that is accomplished by using this water. And that's the increase of greenhouse gases, particularly methane, that's emitted by beef cattle and dairy cows. So we know, again, talking specifically about the San Joaquin region, that there's 65 dairy operations there that house nearly 83,000 dairy cows, I guess. We looked at the 61,000 milking cows in those dairies and looked at how much methane that they produce in a year. And it turns out it's about 17.5 million pounds of methane. And although methane persists in the atmosphere for a much shorter time than carbon dioxide, for instance, just a little over 12 years, it has a much greater ability to trap radiant energy over the time that it does persist. And so scientists have developed multiplicative constants that have that allow us to look at the environmental impact of a given amount of methane in terms of some multiple amount of carbon dioxide. And so for that 17.5 million pounds of methane that's spewing from those 61,000 milking dairy cows, over a 20-year period, that amount of methane is equivalent in environmental impact to the carbon dioxide that results from burning about 600 million pounds of coal. And of course, that's just a small part of California. If you look at the entire state of California, the contribution from cattle to greenhouse gases is much, much greater. There's something like 1.8 million dairy cows and more than 583,000 head of beef cattle that collectively release an amount of methane that's equivalent to the carbon dioxide pollution from burning 21 billion pounds of coal, or roughly the carbon dioxide emissions from five typical coal-burning power plants. So those are some of the details that we uncovered about methane produced by California cattle.
Wow, this is so amazing. Like, you can't walk because the land is collapsing. You can't breathe. You don't have a drop of water. All because people eat meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. Now, about this letter, which was over 30 pages long, and either Todd or Ara, if you want to jump in, how can people see it, and what would you like people to do? Like, what activism to join you? Or
they can see the letter by going to sequoiaforestkeeper.org. sequoiaforestkeeper.org, and there's a executive summary and a press release and the comment letter to the board available down on the right-hand column as you look at the website. So they can download that, and they can write their own letters to the State Water Resources Control Board and register their opinion to the board.
Are you trying to take legal action? You're charging that this is unconstitutional, using water for growing livestock feed, being wasteful. Are you trying to take legal action some way? Or?
We're considering it because it is something that should be paid attention to by the State Water Resources Control Board, and if they don't pay attention to it, then that would be one of our legal options.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mike Hudak, you said you didn't play a major role in this comment letter to the California Water Control Board. So are you working on other projects at the moment yourself?
Yeah, I am. And it's, again, related to the methane emissions issue. One of the things that caught my attention recently is that there's a...
We'll have to hold that thought till after the break here. Live okay. Commercial radio. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook, and Professor Gary Francione will return next week. Thanks for support for the program from Nature's Flavors. Go to naturesflavors.com, order online, thousands of products. All of them are vegan. What a variety there, from, you know, Birdie and Bill's natural sugar-free organic soda to vegan baking mixes, sugar-free, gluten-free, essential oils, well, thousands of products. Order online at naturesflavors.com. And if we ever save a gallon of water here in California by, you know, stopping growing feed for livestock or by skipping showers, you'll have enough water to make some tea. And thanks for support from Select Tea, SELECTTEA.com, Select Tea. And you can order online from Select Tea. So we've been talking about a letter that has been written by Ara Martirosyan, Executive Director of Sequoia Forest Keeper, and Todd Schumann, Director of Wasteful Unreasonable Use, activists who are charging that the use of water in California to grow feed for livestock is unconstitutional. You can see that letter at sequoiaforestkeeper.org, sequoiaforestkeeper.org. Before the break, we were talking to Mike Hudak, who contributed information about methane to this comment letter. And Mike, you were telling us that you have other products, projects related to methane at the moment. We just have a couple of minutes here.
Right. So what I've noticed is that there's an increasing number of articles in peer-reviewed scientific journals that show that putting sheep or cattle onto pasture increases the soil's ability to sequester atmospheric carbon. And, of course, we know there's too much carbon dioxide and methane in the atmosphere from all sorts of human activities, so removing some of that carbon would be a good thing. But what I see again and again in these articles is that the researchers are ignoring the additional carbon that is emitted into the atmosphere by these livestock animals as methane from enteric fermentation, which is in their rumen when they digest the grass and other forage. And so in the few cases where the methane is considered by these researchers, the impact is measured over an unrealistically long period, such as 100 years. And doing this allows the researchers to use a very low multiplicative factor in comparing the impact of that methane to carbon dioxide. Okay, so here's the deal. So for researchers promoting the grazing of livestock, which is basically all of these people writing these articles, being able to claim a low impact for methane is important because very little of the carbon that's sequestered by the soil by which these animals are grazing comes from methane. Most of it comes from carbon dioxide. And so then one might ask, well, why should we care that the scientific literature is being filled with articles that quantify the benefits of grazing? Well, here's one reason to care. I think those articles are probably going to be used by pro-ranching politicians to justify establishing government cap-and-trade programs that will allow industries that emit carbon dioxide or methane to continue emitting those pollutants in return for paying ranchers to convert cropland to pasture upon which they graze livestock. And, of course, that's completely dishonest in terms of trying to save us from global climate change. One of the more popular articles that I've looked at of this sort is one by Franz Lubbers and Studemann titled Soil Profile Organic Carbon and Total Nitrogen During 12 Years of Pasture Management in the Southern Piedmont, USA. And I've critiqued that article. The critique is on my website, mikehudak.com, under the article subpage. It can also be accessed by doing a browser search on my last name, Hudak, H-U-D-A-K, and Franz Lubbers, F-R-A-N-Z-L-U-E-B-B-R-S. And I encourage people to take a look at that critique. And so that's basically what else I've been working on. I'm also in the early stages of doing a very short video based on that critique.
Mm-hmm. So it's so we're being sold grass fed as being environmentally responsible, sustainable, you know, pasture raised and all, but those animals actually produce a lot more methane than their actually harshly confined relatives, I guess.
Yeah, and the other thing, of course, that it's also worth mentioning is that there's considerable evidence that the increase in methane is actually contributing to the drought in California.
There you have it. Okay. Fascinating show. Thanks to all Mike Hudak, Todd Schumann, Ara Mardarogian, and we'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. Skip showers, but go vegan first. Thanks.